Who the Wild Things Are with Ryan McGuire.
You gotta listen to your body.
Oh my God, maybe, you know, I could get out there. I could do this.
Let's take a ride. Find your wild side. Real stories. See with your own eyes.
It's so beautiful.
I'm gonna have the best time out here.
Yeah, I was in tears. I was just like, that's the best, man.
Welcome back to Who the Wild Things Are. My name is Ryan McGuire, and I'm here to bring you conversations with the most wild folks on the planet. If you're enjoying the podcast, please leave us a rating and review on your podcast platform of choice. And if you enjoy the episode, share it with a friend. Appreciate you guys. Let's get it going. All right. Episode 2 with Jason Marsteiner, owner and operator of the Survival University. Not Aaron Rodgers, but...
Not Aaron Rodgers, pretty close.
Commonly confused.
He's younger than me, so he's...
Is he?
Yeah.
How old are you?
Yeah, 48. I'll be 49 in July.
Oh, yeah. I feel like you look younger than him. Yeah. Maybe you're doing something right.
Right, apparently.
It's all going the wild outside. Edibles.
Right. Well, he does the ayahuasca. Maybe I hear it's good, but...
Yeah.
Maybe he's doing too much.
Yeah, I don't know. But thanks for coming down.
Yeah.
And, absolutely. I'm very excited for all the plans we have ahead. I guess most notably I'll be running some of my courses, out with you guys this summer. And,
those will be fun. What I think I have 60 different classes on at least 60 different classes. Well, I shouldn't say different. There are, you know, I guess, total classes, but we have some classes that run multiple times throughout the year. But yeah, we have you coming out for three classes, right?
Three and one family private so far. So I'm gonna be out there a while. I'm gonna have to find myself a little place in the bushes to sleep.
Yeah, well, we got a lot of room to roam. You're coming up here soon to come check out. I mean, you've been to our primary location in the mountains, which is just north of Cripple Creek. We have, 80 acres of my property, my private land, and then we're surrounded by other private land that we're able to use, which puts us probably about 1,000 acres in, I call it my valley, because I own the road in and out. I'm the only person really that comes in and out of there, plus the students, and it's kind of nice because... You know, having that private property to run our classes on, we do within reason whatever we want, right? We can't burn the forest down, but it's nice because we don't have random people coming through. We can just come in and do what we do out there with our classes. And then I call it our advanced location, also a private ranch that we run classes on. And that's roughly 4,500 acres.
Mm.
And you haven't been out there, but you're going up there this weekend.
Tomorrow.
I wish I could make it out there, but I've got other stuff going on. But you're going to meet up with one of my high school buddies that knows that land. He's been out there running around since he's a little kid. Mm. But he knows that place like the back of his hand.
There's nothing better than local knowledge. Maps are great. Mm-hmm. The internet's great. But when you're walking the land with somebody who's been walking it for 40 years, you're like, right. All right, this is the fountain of all the information.
Yeah, I think he's like fifth generation or something. I don't know.
Wow.
Multi-generation of living up there. But even I go out there with him, and he's like, oh, check out this cool little cubby hole or this little area over here, this nice fishing hole and this swimming hole. And yeah, it's pretty nice. But the property that you're going to, it looks like a national monument. We got a stream that rolls through and the cliffs, and there's a climbing area. I think you're familiar. You're a climber, right?
Yeah, I'm actually probably going to climb down there this weekend.
Yeah,
on Sunday.
Yeah, down Shelf Road. I think probably about 3 miles from that where we run those classes is, I don't know if there's a name for it, but Shelf Road. People come from all over the world, all over the country, to go climbing in that area.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, we're just right up the road where we run those,
yeah,
those classes.
It's a spot where, yeah, if you're a climber, you've heard of Shelf Road,
right?
Like, period. Like, people come from all over, and generally it's just because there's so much wild access there.
Yeah,
like, there is so, you could never climb in a lifetime all of the different walls down there,
right? Yeah. And so that's all public land, the majority of it down there. So that ranch that we run the classes on, it sits kind of nested in the center of that BLM, which is there's probably 800,000, a million acres of BLM around that.
It's a really unique thing. And when we first started talking about this, and you shared with me your guys' plans to have this additional spot of land, because the mountain camp is gorgeous. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
And there's so much that can be done there. But to have this nearby additional thousands of acres of private land just like takes it to a whole nother level.
Yeah. Well, so the mountain camp is about 9,600 feet. That's the original location. I started off it with 10 acres there and grew it up to 80 acres. But we're up at 10,000 feet. It kind of limits our season.
Mm-hmm.
We usually start really mid-May until the end of September. By mid-August, maybe late August, it's starting to cool off at night.
Mm-hmm.
And not everybody wants to come out and be cold. We get a lot of, city people coming out to stay out there with us in August, September, October. They just don't want to typically camp that time of year because it drops down. Even that time of year, you can get below, in the high 30s, which can be chilly if you don't have the right gear.
For sure.
So we have a relatively short season. We're trying to pack 60 classes into, that short season. Anytime before that, Colorado spring, we could get 3 feet of snow overnight at any moment. And last three weeks ago, I can't remember, but we had so much snow that I actually had to cancel a winter survival class. That sounds like counterintuitive,
right?
to cancel a winter survival, but it was a beginner winter survival class. And I got my truck stuck, we got a snowplow stuck, and we got a four-wheel drive loader stuck. I'm like, if we're gonna get this heavy equipment stuck, and I've been driving the snow since forever, if I get stuck, I know all my clients are gonna get stuck.
Driving in a Corolla.
And that raises a safety concern. We would have had to walk back about a mile and a half to get to where we run the classes. And I was like, somebody could get hurt. It would take search and rescue or whatever, the rescue team, it could take them a long time to get back to us, and it was just not worth the risk. So we ended up canceling that class. But even now, there's probably 2 feet of snow up at camp right now.
Yeah.
But anyways, what I'm leading into is the other location is about 7,600 feet elevation.
Right.
So, and it's kind of a high plains desert sort of feel with it down in this canyon with a stream that rolls through it. And now it extends our season and it gives us multiple climates that we can run different types of survival classes on, which is pretty great. And it gives us enough room where we can spread out and we could run 10 classes in a day.
Yeah.
And all those participants in this class would never see the other class.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so we got a lot of room to spread out. So
it's a really unique thing, I feel like.
Yeah.
You hear about different survival schools all over the country. I don't know if there's anything that has that kind of magnitude.
Not as far as private land goes, I don't think so. I mean, Boss has got millions of acres of,
public
land.
Right.
And they, that's a great school to go to. It's all public. So who knows who you're going to run into out there.
Mm-hmm.
And they got to be careful what they're allowed to do. Obviously we're careful what we do. But we have a little bit more freedom because it's private property.
Sure.
Are we running your yoga? What are we calling that? The earth skills and yoga?
You got it. Yoga and earth skills.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that'll be there in June.
Right.
So the first three I have, May is the 3-day wilderness skills.
Right. That's right.
And then, which I think you might even be.
Yeah. Me and Jess Caldwell, that's been on your show before. We're going to both, participate in that class, and then it should be a good time.
Yeah. It'll be interesting because that'll be my first class teaching at that location, and I'll have the full array of experience levels. From we have some complete beginners signing up all the way to yourself and everything in between. So I'm excited for that group.
I am too. I mean, I love to learn, so you're talking about being new to the area or whatever, but you're going to have a different approach and to teaching maybe the same thing that I teach. But I love to see everybody's different styles. I tell people that if you took a class from me and then took the same class, the exact same, potentially same class from you, and learned the same skills, you're going to walk away learning totally different stuff,
mm-hmm.
because your style is different than my style, and you're going to have a different approach, a different technique. And each individual, they might learn differently. Your way of teaching is different than my way of teaching. They might not understand my way, and they'll understand your way. And I've got multiple resident instructors, guys that I've trained, and they're a lot of times they talk about, I want to teach it your way. I want to teach it your way. I'm like, no, I don't want you to teach it my way.
Mm-hmm.
You learn my way and then adapt it to what makes sense to you and do it your way. It's not that whole my way or the highway is just a horrible way to run things.
Mm-hmm.
And it really helps our clients because, again, not everybody understands my way. They might understand the way that one of my other people teach.
Yeah.
And everybody's brain's a little bit different, so that's how we do things. But
everybody's brain is different, and the material can be absorbed in different ways.
Right.
And the other thing I like to think about for my classes is, like, I have a hard time even just saying that word class, because class makes you think like we have a strict itinerary and we're going to learn these things and we're not going to stray off the syllabus.
Right.
And it's like my courses is like, yo, there's going to be some things that are really important that we're going to make sure we hammer them. And then we're going to walk through the environment and we're going to improvise and we're going to learn lessons on the way. So it's really more of like an experience. So I feel like even if I took two of your classes on different weekends, I would learn different things in both of those
classes. And Mother Nature changes. So, you know, we work with what's thrown at us that particular day. I mean, we might be out there one day and it's super sunny, the weather's great, and we're starting fires and we're just kicking out fires left and right and mm-hmm. super easy. And then the next week might be running the same class and it's raining or snowing and we have to adapt and change the way we do stuff. And that goes the same way with any technique, you know, whether you're building a shelter or foraging for food or gathering water or whatever, you know, hunting, fishing, your technique has to change. You have to adapt. Are we running your class at the mountain camp, the wild, I forget if we're doing it at the mountain camp or are we going down to the ranch?
Little bit TBD,
yeah.
But I think and that's part of like this whole preseason for both of us,
right.
is like exploring these different areas, because now it's like you acquire all this land, you've got ideas, I've got ideas, you have ideas, all these instructors have ideas. Now we got to figure out, where do we go,
right,
with each of these?
It's nice, like, having options.
Yeah. Do we want to be by this stream, or do we want to be by this like canyon that has a big swimming hole, or like, do we want to focus on wild edibles that are only found in this one spot?
Right.
Do we want to teach high elevation shelters? Or
the beauty of it is really we're probably maybe a 30-minute drive from point A, or from mountain camp to the ranch, and it's only a 30-minute drive really because it's mountain dirt roads for mm-hmm. part of it. And but yeah, you could start with our classes, and we do have classes where we actually hike from the mountain camp down to the valley of the ranch, but we could start at one location and finish at the other one, whether we hike there or drive there, and it just gives us so many different options.
Mm-hmm. And without giving away too much, there will be some of that for the July primitive runner, which will involve a route on that adventure run.
Yeah, we gotta go hike that.
Yeah, but I'm excited.
Yeah, it's a beautiful hike. We do that trip. So I have a 50-day class. At the end of that 50 days, near the end of it, we actually hike those 50-day students from main camp down to the other location. But yeah, you're going to be running it generally the same path that we take during that hike, and it's pretty good run. So that's the primitive running class.
Yeah, right? And that's like the weekend of July 4th.
Yeah.
And we're gonna have Matt Graham.
Right. I was gonna say this is your show, but you want to talk about that class a little bit?
Yeah. I mean, sure. We're gonna have Matt Graham. Like I was mentioning, if you don't know who Matt Graham is, he's like a
legend. Where have you been?
Yeah, I don't know where you've been. He's a legend in the survival game, and he's also a world class ultra runner.
Right.
So he's been a mentor of mine for years, and we've become good friends. And So this year we're running a course together, which is based on a lot of the things that we just talked about, which is this kind of small tribe navigation through the wilderness. Right. And in most respects, it has been kind of control alt deleted from the earth. There's only like, I feel like, a few instances where now this kind of thing exists, where you're using very minimal gear and moving with a close tribe through rugged terrain,
yeah,
and using the environment and your skills to coexist and live with the land.
Yeah.
So it's going to be a really cool experience. And I'm very blessed that Matt,
I think it's great having him come out. Yeah.
I can't think of anybody better. So, mm-hmm.
Yeah. And he normally teaches, what's Utah, right? It is where he's at.
Yeah.
Yeah. So coming out, it's going to be different terrain. He running through the desert normally, but
he's been doing
all sorts of stuff.
The Colorado Trail last several years. Okay. So him and I actually started the Colorado Trail together last year, and we both got COVID.
Oh,
so that was an interesting experience. But
can run from COVID, huh?
You know, you can for like 3 days, and then you start getting full auditory hallucinations.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah,
I tried to. I didn't realize I had COVID, but yeah, had a class, and it just wiped me out. I couldn't figure out why I was so tired. I was just drained, mm-hmm. You know, and I had no endurance, and that was my effect from having COVID. I couldn't do most of the tasks I normally do. I mean, I could start them, like mm-hmm. doing the bow drill. That's, you know, a lot of endurance, and I could not push myself for that last 15 seconds to get that ember.
Yeah.
And I'm sure it's when you're hiking or any sort of endurance challenge, it would kick your butt for sure.
It's a weird thing. It does affect the endurance. And for me, it was like, I think it was the end of day two when I first started to feel it. So I put in two big, like 35 mile days. And it was unsupported, so I had all my food on my back.
Right.
And I'm like, doing great. And then the night of the second day, I'm like, should I keep going? Maybe not. Should I keep going? Should I sleep here? And then all of a sudden, I just feel something hit me, and it's like, lay down right now. So I just laid down right where I was in my bivvy,
mm-hmm.
and all of these deer, and I'm like way in the backcountry, all of these deer circle around me, and I'm like, what is going on? It's I'm like, talking like 10 or 12 deer.
It's like that movie. What is that movie that just came out that, you know what I'm talking about?
It's
like the end of the world and the deer come in. And I think it was like produced by the Obamas or something like that. And the deer were like supposed to be giving people a sign that something was coming. And
I don't know if they
knew
it.
The deer were surrounding you.
I don't know if they knew it or what, but I've never had that experience before.
Yeah.
And at first I was like, these deer, they're really here, right? I'm not mm-hmm. just like seeing this. And they wouldn't leave me alone. They just kept coming up closer and closer to me, and I'm like trying to shoo them off, but I'm too tired at this point, and I'm just like, all right, I'm going to sleep. And they were just surrounding me.
Was sure it wasn't good mushrooms?
No, I don't think it was good mushrooms, but it does sound like that,
right?
And then the next day I woke up and tried to keep pushing, and I had to call it at the end of day three.
Yeah,
I was hearing Lauren's alarm, which is birds chirping.
Mm-hmm.
I was on top of the Continental Divide Trail. There's just nobody around. And all I could hear in both ears was Lauren's alarm. And I'm like checking my phone, and I'm like looking all around, and it's just like full auditory hallucinations.
You got to pay attention to those signs.
Mm-hmm.
You do. I mean, when I'm out there in the woods, I am very aware of my environment. You know, I'm paying attention to storms and, you know, natural things, common things. But man, when you get that hair on the back of your neck stand up, or you hear mm-hmm. those alarms or something, pay attention to those.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, some people might say that's a little bit too woo-woo for them or whatever, but there's a purpose for that. Mm-hmm. Your body, your mind, the universe, the world around you is telling you something's going on. You should turn around, or, you know, pay attention, do something different maybe, or I guess it just depends on the situation and the person, but
trusting your intuition.
Trust your intuition. So you're hearing those alarms and you weren't feeling well. So if you pushed on, who knows? And I think a lot of people ignore those signs
mm-hmm.
and they push on, and they get them in trouble.
Yeah, I have a hard time balancing that too, right?
Because
like I'm like trying to be Mr. Fast and run and be mm-hmm. tough, and then, you know, there is that balance with like following your intuition, because if I listen to the voice inside my head every day, I'd probably just eat ice cream all day every day.
And, right.
You know?
Yeah.
So it's like that balance.
That's true. You have to have that balance. But when something is just really off, pay attention to it. But yeah, we have hurdles when we're out there, whether you're into sports or endurance or whatever, you have to push yourself past those limits. Otherwise we never grow. But there are situations where you're like, this, something's not right. Listen to those.
Yeah, and I think just clearing things up, I've gotten a lot of questions about the primitive runner, like, how hard is it, and those kinds of things. And I've made it very clear to people that it is not a death march. Like,
right.
This is meant to be a really cool experience, but you don't need to be a pro ultra runner to do this.
Right.
I think most of the people that are doing this are very casual runners that are in good shape and like to move their bodies.
Was that a 4-day class?
Yeah.
Yeah.
4 days.
4 days? I don't know how you can read that. I'm way older than you. I can't see that.
I've looked at that calendar 100 times. It's 5 days, but you'll get in on one day and you'll leave at noon on the last day.
Right.
So it's, yeah.
Yeah.
4 nights.
You're running from our main camp down to the other location. I don't know how many days you're expecting to do that run in, but it's going to be a beautiful journey for you guys. And when you go hike with that pre-hike that trail with me, you'll see and you'll be like, wow, this is so cool. But yeah, I'm excited to take you down there. And then, I guess your yoga class, your yoga and primitive skills class,
that'll also be at the land,
right?
The lower elevation, right. The 7,000.
I think we're going to meet at the top
and then probably
transport
shuttle
down to the other one. But that's going to be a pretty good one. That, I think connecting that class, I think, is going to be a great class to just connect with the outdoors or Mother Nature or however you want to do it. And I think we're definitely lacking in that nowadays. You got people that go to the park, go outdoors to do yoga or to connect or whatever, but this is going to be different because you're going to be in the middle of a million acres of untouched land, and you're not going to hear cars driving by, you're not going to hear city, anything. The only thing you might hear is an airplane fly over.
Yeah. It almost makes the hair on my neck stand up,
right?
Thinking about the true sound of silence and really connecting both with yoga and then also all of the skills. So there will be a lot of naturalist crafts, like building different things we need to stay out for an extended period of time. There will be some survival components, just like any survival course. You'll be learning about different things to save your butt.
Right.
And also one of the funnest parts is that we're going to have cold water available, natural cold water, and wood powered saunas.
Yeah. Oh, which, that's right. You're bringing in your saunas, aren't you?
Yeah. We're going to have,
those are great.
We're going to have saunas that are, fired by the wood. So piece of it will be starting the fire for the saunas, and you'll get to connect with that skill set while practicing the skills.
Yeah. And those streams are cold. So if you're jumping back and forth between that sauna and a stream, I guess it's at 7,600 feet, but it's still chilly.
You don't really get, I feel like, warm streams in Colorado.
Nope.
It doesn't matter where you are. It's like it could be an 80 degree day. That water is going to be freezing.
Right. Yeah. I'm not a really avid swimmer. I can swim okay, but I'm not. And everybody's like, I can't believe you can't swim. And I'm like, well, swimming really isn't a thing at 10,000 feet.
No.
That's where I grew up. I was up there. So
You dip.
But you dip. You get in, you're like, okay, I've had enough, and you get out.
You were doing a big cold plunge thing like last year, right?
Yeah, that was at our 10,000 foot elevation. And some people were, that's not very cold. I'm like, you come up here and jump in the water with me. It is frigid.
Yeah.
Even in the summer. And I was jumping in at 5 o'clock in the morning, so it's cold.
That's
cold.
The hardest time to get yourself to do it.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, get First up out thing. Of bed. I would get up out of bed and I would jog, a couple hundred meters. I'd jog down to the pool and then dive in, and then I was sitting there for as long as I could. And it's just, instant shock.
Just almost. Trying to hold it together.
Right. And sit in there for as long as I possibly could, 3 minutes and then get out. Sometimes I chickened out. It was too cold, mm-hmm. and I would go in at like 8 o'clock in the morning or something like that.
But you have that like inner dialogue. Mm-hmm. You don't need to do it today. Come on, why are we doing this?
And that's those hurdles that we were talking about, pushing your mind past those spots.
Right.
You have to get over those barriers, and that was a mental weakness, not a something could go on. You know, something bad is happening.
Yeah, but I think just. On the yoga thing, I think you'll get to, that'll be a nice piece of it, is battling with like the sauna and the cold, mm-hmm. and getting used to those elements and pushing yourself a little bit. Because right. a lot of that weekend is not going to be super intense.
Right.
It's going to be about learning wild edibles. It's going to be about yoga and breath work and reflection. But there will still be a little bit of the opportunity to challenge yourself with the contrast therapy if you're looking for
right.
it.
Right, yeah. And being able to just sit around the campfire after that nice day of learning the skills and doing your meditation and doing your yoga and then just hanging out with good people in the middle of that beautiful, pristine land is going to be a great class. I wish I could take it, but I think I've got like one of my 5-day classes during the same time.
Gotcha. Yeah, I think it's going to be special. And this is the first time we've done it. So
right.
We'll learn a lot and hopefully just make this like a new staple.
When is that one? I forget.
That one is in June. I think it's June 14th.
Yeah, okay. Can you see?
I think I can.
I think it's June 14th to the 16th.
Yeah.
I've looked at this thing so many times that I can't make out the numbers, but I can see where it is on there. June 14th to the 16th, yep.
Yeah.
So it'll be a good one.
Yeah.
And I think one of the best parts about that is my friend who's coming out to do the yoga, name's Kirst. And I don't actually do yoga all that much, but when I do, it's always her class.
Right on.
It's a very meaningful practice, and just naturally, she's very nature-based. Like
yeah.
even if you're doing it at a indoor facility and that kind of thing, she's still thinking a lot about human nature, and I think it bodes really well for the theme of the class.
Yeah.
So, and she does these all over. They just got back from Costa Rica for one, and they're going to Joshua Tree soon, so she travels all over, and her and her husband Cody, who's a good friend of mine, they travel all over and do this. So
nice. We were supposed to be down in Costa Rica too for a jungle survival trip, but that one never got kicked off this year. Hopefully we'll be able to do it next year. I think it's just too long, that class. It's one that, excuse me, that we host through the Survival University. I link up with locals from Costa Rica, and we spend 12 days down there in the jungle. It's more of an adventure trip where you're learning some survival skills. It's not super hardcore. We actually sleep a couple nights out in the jungle in hammocks, but it's all guided with guys that I've been working with down there for like 5 years. Great, great group of people that I've linked up with there. But yeah, for whatever reason, we just didn't have enough people for that class. But hopefully next year we'll try to run again. But I think I'm going to shorten it because 12 days is a lot of time for
commitment.
People to take off. And but it's probably I've the first time I went down there, I think, was 2016,
mm-hmm.
and it's probably one of the most fun things I've ever done in my life. You know, and it's all curated. We feed you the whole time, and got a guide, and you know, we take care of the people the entire time we're down there. So
I'd love to do that.
Oh, it's great. It's a good time.
But I definitely see that it would be tough to get a big group down there. I think even with stuff like yoga retreats, it's hard to get people to go. It's just a big commitment.
It is. And I think 6 people is the most I've had down with me, including myself. So I had 5 clients plus the guides and whatnot down there. It's
nice.
A great time. But yeah, we've got so much stuff going on this year though that I'm like, it's kind of a relief,
right?
I don't have to go down there this year for that. But yeah, so we, beyond your primitives, or I keep saying primitive skills, wilderness skills, your yoga class, your running class,
mm-hmm.
We do medical classes. I think we probably talked about a lot of this stuff last time I was on, but good refresher, I suppose. But
yeah,
I bring in Mark with Mark DeJong with Off Grid Medic, comes out and does the wilderness first responder and wilderness first aid class. He's a retired Navy corpsman that's been a nationally recognized paramedic since 1998. So he's got a lifetime of experience for that. We've got a pretty legit navigation class. I've got an Army Ranger retired. He was in for 22 years. He taught navigation to Rangers in Ranger school. So he's pretty dialed in. And we actually get this year, we have, I think, six cadets from the Air Force are actually coming out to to take that training. It's that solid of a program that they're not from the Air Force Academy, but they are from, you know, in the Air Force. But and then we have there's it's a 3-day navigation class where we stay at our primary camp, the 80 acres, and they're learning the basics, and they're doing short runs, the azimuth and the back azimuth, and reading a map and a compass, and, you know, your core skills. That's the 3-day class. They're pretty solid by the time they're done with that class.
Yeah.
And if they take the advanced class, then we take them down to the other location, and it's so rugged down there that if we plan the route right, you literally can't walk from point A to point B in a direct line. You just can't do it because of the terrain. So they have to learn it to triangulate and route plan. And if they don't route plan correctly by reading the map, they'll get to a steep hill that they won't be able to climb, so they'll have to walk around
or get cliffed out.
Yeah. So that's our advance. And your walks might be 2 miles. We're at our main location, it might be 700 meters.
Mm-hmm.
And you get down there, it's, you know, you got a good solid walk. And we do a real quick survival training. And those people that come down for the advance are also out there with my 50 dayers. So they have already been through like 3 weeks of training. So they're pretty solid in their skills, and they'll have one of those 50 dayers with them, and they go out. So we do a really quick run through some survival skills. And the intention is they're supposed to walk out 2 miles or whatever to get to that a point. And once they get that point, it tells them to the next point they got to. But we make them carry their gear with them. So just in case, and they have radios, so if they need to, they can call back in on us. But if they get out to that point and they're like, oh, it's 5 o'clock at night, we're not going to make it back to base camp, let's just camp here for the night.
Right.
So they don't have to check in. They don't have to come back during the advanced 3-day class. They can stay out there field and then finish things up the next day if they need to.
Sweet.
But yeah, we've got what else? We've got Jess Caldwell. She's coming out from Washington. She runs Wild Kind Academy. I think, you know, you might have her on again. But she's got a women's river retreat that we run down at the other location. I think it's a 5-day class. Maybe it's a weekend class. I've got so many classes, I can't keep them all straight anymore. But, you know, when I first started out doing this back in 2015 is when I really started going full time. I was the only instructor.
Mm-hmm.
And I just really wanted to teach people. And I tried as me as the instructor to try to run a women's only class. Boy, I got tarred and feathered for that one. I was just, you know, I was trying to do the right thing.
Right.
Because you get, women want to come out here and learn. And they want, and I think it's great. And I want them to come out. But I didn't have a female instructor at that time. So I was like, oh, I'll try to run a women's class. So that, and I'm very easy to work with, very easy going, and you know, no judgment, no anything. And I just want to teach whoever's out there. I just want to teach them. And a lot of times you get a male instructor that just wants to, you know, I guess we'll say misogynist or whatever, you know.
Yeah,
just macho. And I'm like, I'm not that guy. I just want to help you. I want you to learn, and I'm going to let you struggle until you're ready to just throw whatever it is you're trying to learn out in the woods. And then I'll stop you and be like, all right, let me help you over this hurdle. And then I'll back up a little bit and I'll let you complete it. But anyways, that didn't go over well with me trying to run a women's only class. So I finally found, I've actually got three solid women instructors now. They're great. I've got Jess Caldwell with Wild Kind Academy. I've got Jax Gnanga. I'm sorry, Jax, if I messed up your last name.
She's awesome. Yeah, I got to meet her.
She's super cool. But she's She's a former instructor for Pathfinder.
Right.
And then I've got Kirsten Zolievic, formerly Survival Betty. Mm-hmm. She comes in from Oregon, and she runs an elderberry farm and a bunch of plant medicine stuff. So
she's like a plant specialist, right?
Yeah, so she comes out and does a plant. I think we changed the name to Ethnobotany 101, and then an advanced herbalism class. So she comes out and does a plant medicine class, two plant medicine classes.
I want to take that.
Yeah, so great, solid instructors. All three of them are great. I'm so proud to have them as part of my team out here. But they're, Jess is coming in, I think, June 1st to start. I think she has to fly back and forth for a few times out to Washington. But she's going to spend the majority of the summer out at the Survival University here in Colorado. She's got two really big core classes, but she's going to be helping out with a lot of the other classes.
Mm-hmm.
And then we got Jax coming in. Jax has got like a bushcraft base camp where she's teaching you. If you go out in the woods and you want to just set up a cool camp and you want to, you know, build everything from that nature around you, and you want to be comfortable, and you want to build tripods and tables and chairs and a broom and, you know, just fun things out in the woods.
So cool.
Yeah, that's her class for one of them. And then I think she might be doing a tree walk. I don't know.
She's like a super expert on trees.
Yeah, so the problem with Colorado, especially where we're at the mountain camp, is we only have like three trees.
Yeah, we got spruce and pine and aspen.
But I might take her down to the, I think we'll probably do that, take her down to the lower location, which has a bigger abundance of different types of trees.
Is it like juniper and pinion down there?
There's juniper, there's pinion, there's willow, there's oak, there's...
Oh, yeah, there is oak down there.
There's all sorts of stuff. So,
cool.
But I think Jax is going to come in. She's actually... I've got an event that I have to go to in the 1st of June, and I just said, hey, Jax, none of my guys are available. They all have something going on. Will you come in June and cover for me for this class? She's like, yes, absolutely. So she's going to be coming in, running one of my 5-day or a few days of my 5-day class,
mm-hmm.
the beginning of June. But I think we might be picking her up for all summer.
Mm.
So she'll be out there. I mean, she's got other classes that she's going to be teaching throughout the country here and there. But I'm hoping that she's going to stick around a little bit longer. Normally where she teaches this June, July, August is like 187 degrees during the day.
Roughly.
Roughly. But where we're at up in the mountains during the summer, it's beautiful weather. We're 70s to mid 80s. And it's just, some people are like, oh my God, 70 sounds so cold.
No, it's great.
It's great out here in Colorado because you can reach up and touch the sun. You know,
it's funny you say that because last week I was in Arkansas.
Yeah,
and this is the end of their viable season,
right?
Because I was in the bush. Naturally, I'm wearing sandals and shorts as I do,
right?
Which is not what you do in Arkansas because I was just covered in ticks.
Oh yeah,
just right. All over the place. And they were like, the guys I was talking to, they're like, yeah, this is our last weekend, really. Because it's after that point, it's so hot mm-hmm. and so bug infested and poison ivy infested that it really made me so thankful.
Right.
I'm like, dude.
This is where we pick up. Right now is like, when we start taking off.
Like, it gets amazing in Colorado mm-hmm. during these spring and summer months.
Right.
And even early fall. I'm like, I was not being thankful enough for how amazing our guiding season is.
Right. Yeah. And we really, I don't know, I don't even know what month it is anymore, but we start kicking off, I would say about mid-April. Well, we're starting to pick up right now, but really the first week of May, we start trickling in classes. But by June, we're full speed ahead.
Mm-hmm.
June, July, August, I'm just, my calendar every day has got something on. I mean, I might not be teaching personally a class, right, but I've got somebody. So for 90 days straight, we've got some class going on out up there. And then September starts slowing down a little bit. It's usually like weekend classes. In October, we might have one or two classes.
Mm-hmm.
And then October starts getting too cold at 10,000 feet. But now we've got that other location, we can push into November. Mm. Usually December is not a great time because everybody's, you know,
pretty cold.
It's getting cold, but people are thinking about holidays and, you know, Christmas and New Year's and whatever, you know, saving money so they can go buy presents that they don't really want to give to people that they don't really want. You know? Just give the gift of adventure. Yeah, that's a little give Christmas plug. But yeah, and then we're dead in the water until, you know, January and February is frigid up there, right?
Oh yeah.
And then in March we're potentially getting pounded by snow, and then April, which is now, it's hit or miss with snow.
Mm-hmm. I did my course, one course last year. First one was in April.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, we'll be clear. Like, everything is so nice right now. Mm-hmm. I had been up there a couple times beforehand, and the snow was starting to melt. And I was like, this is going to be great. Course was amazing. It was a great course. But I'm walking them on a plant walk, trying to find a spring up in this aspen grove.
Right.
And we start walking back. And it's been 65, 70 and sunny all day. And then randomly, it starts snowing.
Yeah.
I'm like, it's warm out. I have a t-shirt on. How is it snowing right now?
And that's what the time of year that people get in trouble, though.
Yeah.
Your common adventurer that's not familiar with Colorado,
mm-hmm,
comes out here this time of year, and they're like, oh, it's a beautiful day. I'm going to throw on my Tevas and my shorts and grab my water bottle and, you know, maybe a light jacket.
Mm-hmm.
And they head out, and they're 5 miles deep, and all of a sudden this blizzard, Colorado blizzard, rolls in, and they're not prepared whatsoever. That's why me and you exist, is to teach people to not do that.
It is. And a lot of times it's like, you know, we both get this same crowd of like preppers and people who are like getting ready for the end of the world. And that's why, you know, they're coming to this class. You know,
right.
It's a small percentage, but they exist. Right. And I'm like, for most of our clientele, what's much more likely is you're going to get caught, for lack of a better term, with your pants down in the woods.
Right.
You're going to get caught off guard. And yeah, that's when it's really important to have skills. Because the fact of the matter is, if you're going to be outside for 200 days a year for the next 10 years of your life in Colorado, you are going to face a couple situations.
It's a matter of time before you run into it.
Yeah. Even if you are well prepared, you're going to run into a couple of those situations. Yeah.
Just really what we teach people is be prepared to spend the night,
mm,
and know how to use everything that you have with you.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of people that don't, but you're talking about that. You talked about the prepper clientele. And like you said, it is a very small percentage of the people that, when you think prepper, that come out. But I think the world is changing with the pandemic. People are starting to realize they need to get prepared. But
yeah,
but my point is the majority of our clients are your Colorado adventurers,
mm-hmm,
and people that have the time or the money or whatever to get away for the weekend, or the skiers or the backpackers or the mountain bikers, the adventurers.
Mm-hmm.
That's who I see. And I get people from all over the country, all over the world coming out here,
mm-hmm,
to learn these skills. And even some of the most advanced adventurers that I've had, they've climbed Mount Everest multiple times, and they've done, you know, these crazy adventures, and they, mm-hmm, come to my class and they're like, wow, I didn't realize all the stuff I didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
And they all pick stuff up that they found valuable. But yeah, that's our, you know, your target market, my target market, our clients are those people that are worldly adventurers or just local adventurers that I don't want to say hardcore outdoorsmen. They just come to Colorado to enjoy,
mm-hmm,
everything that Colorado has to offer, and they're realizing they don't know what to do when something goes wrong.
Yeah, and like you were saying, it's a good mix. Like, you'll have some, yeah, people that are like legit world travelers that have backpacked through the Himalayas, and then you'll have another guy who's just kind of getting into backpacking.
Yeah, I've had people come out that have never set up a tent before.
Yeah,
and they pull me aside and they're a little embarrassed. They're like, hey, can you help me out? I'm like, yeah, of course, that's what I'm here for. No judgment. Absolutely. There's, you know, I was at a point in my life at some point where I've never set up a tent, and I get people like that all the time. I've had people come out that have never been anywhere where there wasn't a street light, and they're embarrassed about it. I'm like, what? Don't be embarrassed. You're here. You're here now. That's all that matters.
Mm-hmm.
Let's teach you.
Yeah, there will be multiple people I know already at my courses who this will be, if not the first time camping, like in the backcountry, this will be the top three.
Yeah.
This will be one of the first three times.
Right.
And that's totally fine. And then if you're the expert rock climber who travels the world and just wants to pick up skills and also learn about how to start fires and learn wild edibles, both are welcome, and both right. can share the same fire and have an amazing time.
Yeah, and they help each other out. It's great when you see that worldly adventurer coming over and be like, hey, I know how to do that. Let me help out. Let me tell you some stories. And yeah, you sit around those campfire at the end of the night, and everybody just comes together and bonds, and it's just a great thing.
Yeah, I know me personally, like, I still take courses all the time. Yeah. It's funny, like when I have downtime, I'll just go through the Survival University, and I was just like trying to figure out which weekends I have open so I right. can see which courses yeah. I can take.
I know. I kind of do the same thing, because when I started out, it was just me teaching classes, your core classes, food, fire, shelter, water, really. And that's what I enjoy doing. That's what I'm best at. So that's why I teach. But I wanted to learn more. I want to learn medical. I want to be better at navigation. I wanted to be better at plant medicine. I want to be better at mushrooms, better at even the stuff that I knew and primitive skills and blah, blah, blah. And I didn't know it. I'm like, I could go watch YouTube mm-hmm. and then try to learn it on YouTube, or I can go find somebody that's really good at it and bring them in to what was back then Colorado Mountain Men's Survival. I'm still Colorado Mountain Men's Survival, but now TSU is this umbrella that I bring all these awesome people that I found in mm-hmm. to teach at my location. And now I'm like, all right, my navigation is a perishable skill. I've taken the nav class from Matt a few years ago. I need to retake it.
Absolutely.
So when he comes back, I'm like, hey, I'm going to sit on the class. And of course. And,
yeah, especially navigation.
Right, and recertifying for the wilderness first responder. And every year, you know, as long as my time allows, when my plant people are out there teaching plant classes, I'm bebopping along mm-hmm. with all the other students going, oh, yeah, that's right. I forgot what that one was or what that one does, and relearning that stuff. And that's, we all need to do it. But I'm also, now that I've got a little bit more time because I have so many people. I think there's 20 instructors that work with me now.
Wow.
Now that I'm not always teaching all the time, just me, I have a little bit more freedom. And I'm like, all right, there's a class out in Georgia I want to take, or there's one out in Tennessee, or there's one out in California. Mm-hmm. I go learn new stuff. And when I do that, that's for me. Mm-hmm. It might help improve what I do, how I teach things at class. But I will never go, like that we'll say navigation. I will never go and take a nav class and be like, all right, now I'm good enough to go teach navigation.
Right. That's not the vibe.
That's not the vibe. That's never what I've been at. So yeah, there are some other places that try to do that. They'll go teach another class, or they'll go learn from another school and then come back and try and reteach it.
There is a lot of that.
Yeah, be careful.
There's a lot of the like backyard YouTube survival experts.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, that's all fine and dandy as long as you're not putting on a new or like a persona that you actually spend a lot of time in the backcountry.
Right.
Because that's my issue is not that they don't know what they're doing. My yeah. issue with that is that it becomes dangerous.
Right.
So spreading information that other people are going to take as Bible. And,
right.
And then get themselves into trouble.
Yeah. I mean, there's even the new people. They want to, they're like, hey, I learned this cool thing. Let me show it to you. That's mm-hmm. great. There's great. Nothing wrong with that. But you should be like, hey, I learned, this is new to me, and I'm just trying to teach you what I think I learned. So, but you get people that try to kind of hide that they're new.
Mm-hmm.
And just don't hide it. If you're new, be proud of it and be like, this is a cool technique. Let's mm-hmm. learn together.
Absolutely.
You know? So.
It's a good place to be. I think always having that beginner's mindset.
Right.
You know, like always coming into a course, even if you feel like
humble,
I know how to sharpen a knife. Like, well, maybe listen to this guy over here. He might tell right. you something about edge retention that you didn't know beforehand.
Yeah.
And, you know, just come in with like a learning mindset and try yeah. and pick up on some new things.
Yeah. I always do go in humble. I worry though, because I'm not saying that I'm, you know, this big celebrity, but I've been doing this for a while. So, you know, people in the industry know me, and I'm always like, when I come take your class, don't treat me like anybody else. Just assume that I'm brand new, know nothing, and I just want to learn the way you're learning it, and don't change your style. I'm not trying to steal anything from you to take back with me to use your program or whatever. I just want to learn, and that's for me, you know, because I have my way and I like to teach my way, but I like to have other styles. So if for some reason my way isn't working in that moment where I'm trying to do something, I have some other tool to pull out. And then also if I'm teaching my way to a student and they're not getting it, I can be like, all right, I know these two or three other ways from other people I've learned from. Let me try to teach you their way. Mm-hmm. And then I'll be like, this is something that I learned from blah, 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 whoever it was.
Yeah.
And maybe you should go take the class from them also.
I think it's really cool to cite where you learn skills. Yeah. Just like if you were a researcher and like, this is kind of our science, our art.
Right.
It's cool to say like, yeah, I was sitting with Dave Holliday and he showed me how to do this because I couldn't do it for the life of me. Right. And then he showed me how to do it and it made a lot of sense. And now I'm showing you it. I think that's, that's a cool thing to do.
Like, I mean, sometimes respect. I forget. I'm like, who did I learn that from? Or, you know, and some of the greats are not with us anymore, you know, so, which is unfortunate. But yeah, we've learned, I'm sure you've learned some from the survival greats that have passed. And, you know, anytime I think about it or I try to throw their name out there, this is who I learned it from. And
I was sitting with Dave like 2 days ago. For folks who don't know, he's like considered one of the the godfathers of like this Americana survival movement. And like, you know, he's not teaching skills anymore, but just being around him, you just soak up
so much of that stuff.
Yeah, he teaches with Philip.
He came out with us 2 years ago. He did a private thing.
I shouldn't say
us.
He's not teaching. That's not fair. He's teaching like three courses this month. I don't know why I said
that. But he doesn't have – he's not – well, he used to be like the founder or boss.
He was like a high-up instructor at Boss and was there all the time. And now I think he's kind of do a course here, do a course there, do a course there. You know, he's more like the guy that comes into different spaces now.
Right.
But I wasn't learning hard skills from him, but just even being around somebody with that much experience, you're just like, okay, I need to soak up everything this guy's saying.
And all his stories.
Yeah. He's an intriguing individual.
Right. Yeah.
So I think the moral of the story there is that there's something to learn from everyone, not just other instructors, but also learning from students.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I've picked up stuff from students
so many times.
I'll do something, they'll be like, why did you do it that way? I'm like, well, that's just the way I know it. And they're like, oh, check this out. And I'm like, I like that. Mm-hmm. I might utilize that in my class later. Or I don't really like it works for you, but I don't like that method. And there's nothing wrong with that, but
totally.
And I'm the same way. If a student doesn't like the way that I am teaching them something, they have another way, I'm like, great. Do the way that works for you, as long as it's not going to get anybody hurt and it works.
Mm-hmm.
Do it that way. Keep doing it that way. You don't have to do it my way. This is just the way I do it. But yeah, I've learned from students and it's pretty awesome.
Yeah. Sometimes you'll have a specialist in your course, like you'll be teaching a survival course and you'll have a plant specialist.
Right.
And she's trying to learn survival skills, but she happens to be a plant specialist and you're doing a walk.
Right.
And you're like, here's this plant, it does so-and-so. And then you're like walking to another plant over there. She's like, oh, why did we skip all this parsnip? And you're like, I didn't know what that was or what it was used for.
Right.
And you're like, well, you can actually use it for this and it's edible raw and you can also do this. And you're like, all right, I just learned a new plant from this plant specialist who was hidden in the realms of my course and I didn't even realize she was here.
Yeah.
Or new knots from rock climbers or, you know, all different kinds of stuff. Or even just life experience, you know, people who have gone through certain things, brought up in tough times, or just been through different experiences.
Those campfire stories are some of the best. At the end of the day, listening to people and tell about, you know, why they're there.
A lot of them that I've heard, depending on the course, have been like, you know, they're at a crazy point in their life, and that's why they're like seeking out these skills.
Well, not only the skills, but just the time out in the woods. I think a lot of people come out just for the therapy. And I know I get a lot of military veterans that come out and they miss that brotherhood by being around a group of people around the campfire. But it's just reconnecting with nature, getting away from the rat race of society these days, just coming down. Another thing, the 4th of July weekend, a lot of people hate fireworks. They hate the explosions. They hate listening to them all night long. I run a class. I specifically run a class over the 4th of July weekend so people can come out and get away from it. And we don't set off fireworks up at camp. So people can get away and just come down and relax and just sit around the campfire and enjoy the peace and quiet.
Mm. That's a good one. I hadn't even thought of that, really.
Yeah.
The another one we were just saying, I just had a guy reach out to me yesterday. High school dropout that built this business empire, and he's, you know, great dude. Seems like, you know, online he's got his life together and everything's great because, you know, he's very successful. And then kind of shared with me that he was going through a breakup of a long-term significant other, and he was just like, yo, I need to come like out to the wilderness, like for a course, like I'm going through one of the hardest times, and I feel like that's where I'm being called, is to go sit, have a moment with nature so I can like collect my thoughts efficiently, because it is hard to collect your thoughts with all this going around 24/7.
Right.
And I'm not saying everyone needs to be a caveman. I'm just saying like going outside and sitting in the silence and focusing on nature for a minute can help you figure out what's important.
Yeah, and you get away from the distractions. I mean, a lot of people try to avoid their problems.
Mm-hmm.
They turn on music really loud. They turn on the TV real loud. They distract themselves with work. They distract themselves on whatever it is, you know, mm-hmm. going playing pool or going to the bar and drinking or whatever. When you're out in the woods, there's not really a distraction. You mm-hmm. have to feel those feelings, think those thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
You can distract yourself a little bit with Mother Nature, but it's a more of a peaceful distraction, and they can work through some of their problems.
I'm guilty of that too.
Yeah.
I like, for me, it's usually like go exhaust myself somehow.
Right. Like, yeah. We all do it. We have some sort of distraction that we do. And I've been learning to how to not distract myself and face my problems or, you know, whatever it is. And, I think being out in the woods or having that quiet and that silence is really beneficial for me, and I think it's beneficial for a lot of different people for whatever their reason is.
Mm-hmm. And the nice thing about like courses is it gives you the confidence to be able to go and do that on your own.
Right.
You know, if you don't have the confidence and the skill set to be able to seek out nature in your own capacity or with one other individual, you're not going to be able to go out as regularly and get that therapeutic feeling.
Right. And you're so worried about the what ifs. What if the storm rolls in? What if I get lost? What if I have a bear encounter? You're not focusing on your task of connecting with nature. You're mm-hmm. you're not scared per se, but you've got those fears,
mm-hmm.
A little bit of anxiety while you're out there because you don't have the skills.
Yeah.
So now, if you have some skills, as long as you don't get to the point where you're overconfident, you know, ego is a big trouble out there. But if you have those core skills, you can go a little bit further where you can be more comfortable. You can be a little bit more away from people and
mm-hmm.
Really get into your therapy, if you will.
Yeah. I was talking to my sister yesterday who a couple years ago she hadn't camped that much, and now like the last 2 years she's gone on like big adventures with me. She's out, you know, making fires with ferro rods and doing ultralight backpacking and rock climbing, and you know, she's all right. The way in now, and she's picked up all these skills. But I sent her a picture. I'm like, hey, do you remember when we camped at this location? And she was like, I do remember that camp, because I was convinced that night when I got up to go to the bathroom that a mountain lion was going to kill me every time I got up. And she's like, it's crazy to look at how far I've come since that day, getting familiar and more comfortable right. out in the wilderness. And
yeah.
I was like, that's a cool story, because I never thought of it like that, but it's so true. Now yeah. she's sleeping on top of mountains like no problem, and
right
doesn't think about it.
Yeah, the primitive shelters really open people's eyes up, because most mm-hmm. people are used to being in this little shell. It's a tent, right? And it's all closed in, and they feel safe, or they're really not. You know, it's just a soft taco shell for a bear. But no, that's a horrible thing to say for people that are listening to this that are paranoid. But no, really, we for my 50-day class, the students that come out for that, they have to stay in a tarp shelter or a primitive shelter the entire time. So it's yeah. an open shelter. They just have you know, kind of a roof over their head, but that, you know, that's it. Mm-hmm. And the first week or so, I don't think they sleep, most mm-hmm. of them. They're freaked out. And mm-hmm. I'm like, why are you freaked out? Just, you know, you become used to it. But I'm like, look, you have your shelter. It's no different than a tent, only it's open. You can see mm-hmm. what's out there. A tent, the stuff is still there. You just can't see it coming. Mm-hmm. But now you can see it inside your tarp shelter. But not only that, but if you want to, you can build a fire right in front of you.
Right.
A fire is, you know, it's going to warm you up. It's, you know, it's going to give you some entertainment. If you wake up in the middle of the night, you have a hard time sleeping, you just sit there and watch that fire, it'll lull you back to sleep. It's a deterrent to animals. You know, you've got that safety, a real safety blanket mm-hmm. right there. Whereas a tent, it's a false sense of security.
Yeah.
But my point is people do adjust, they adapt, they go out there and they've got that fear. And when you keep going and you do this, you know, getting out there and doing this stuff, if you become comfortable. And then if you're learning the skills, then you become comfortable faster. So if you're going out yeah. there with somebody like you or myself or any of my other instructors, and they're teaching you these things, you're able to push yourself a little bit further, and you're going to learn those skills faster, and you're going to just enjoy your time out there
for sure. Yeah, it's funny how overrated tents are a little. Like, you know, they are. I don't know. I'm partial to the cave life. I feel like people look at it weirdly because there's like a stigma around like cavemen or something. But mm-hmm. What is better than a cave? And for me, like if I can have a three-walled cave, that's like perfect because right. I have my door already made, no yeah. work, and I can live in it for 3 months, absolutely no problem. Right. It won't decay. It won't blow away in the wind. It stays warm.
Yeah.
And then I kind of like, I do like the half Wookiee up
uh-huh.
on a cave wall.
Right.
There's only one wall. And that way, it's not as bomb-proof, but you can still have a fire inside.
Yeah.
You have most of the sides covered to keep warm. You know, I don't know. I like the cave
life. See, I'm a little bit more bougie. I like my hammock. I go out there and I
hammock's great.
But yeah. But I've spent time on the ground and on the caves, and that's just as awesome. Everybody's different. So if you want to go out there in a tent,
great.
Do it. Just get out there. If you want to go out there and sleep under a tarp, if you just want to go out and sleep on the ground, if you want to do a hammock mm-hmm. with us, with my team, there's no judgment. We don't care.
No.
Do your thing. If you're out there for certain classes, we do have rules.
Right.
You know, and they're more like guidelines. You know, if you just are terrified to sleep on the ground, yeah, we'll let you sleep in a tent. You're taking away from your experience. You're putting that barrier up, and you're not pushing yourself. You're not bettering yourself.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're not ready, we're not going to make you.
Yeah. And the thing is, it's like there's practical applications for like every level from right. low tech to high tech.
Right.
You know, I've used all of them. You've used all of them, and
yep.
it's good to learn them all. So it is kind of a weird thing to be like dogmatic about. Mm-hmm. You know, where you stand, because the reality is that most of us use all of them,
right?
You know, yes, like, well, this point. Is the way. It's like, well, what about that time you were sleeping in a tent?
That one time, remember? I know, I saw you. Got pictures.
Gee. I was next to you, actually. I heard you snoring.
Right.
But yeah. What other courses that you haven't mentioned are you excited for at TSU this year?
Mushrooms. Yeah. So mushrooms are difficult because there, you have to have the right humidity and the right amount of rainfall and the right amount of sun and everything, you know, all the stars have to align properly to get those mushrooms. So we've selected, I think, 3 or 4 dates where we expect the mushrooms to be the best that they can, and we're just gonna have to play it by ear. And if we get out there and the mushrooms aren't good that day, then or the week before, then I just have to contact my students and be like, hey, this might not be the best one. You might have to transfer the next one. You can still come out and we'll do a talk mm-hmm. about mushrooms, but there might not be 50 pounds of mushrooms. We might only go out and find a couple mushrooms. So great class. A lot of people are interested in mushrooms, but it's hit or miss. And mm-hmm. I'm hoping, because we had such a lot of snow up there this year. Usually when we have a pretty good snow this time of year, when it comes to mushroom season, which is like the end of July, the beginning of August. We have a fair amount, but it's just all depends on nature. You know, we talked about Jax's class and Jess's classes, and I'm really excited for those because they're two phenomenal instructors. Jess and I have a hiking class. We're going to be taking the same route that you take the run with Matt Graham, but we're going to be hiking that over 3 or 4 days, kind of a leisurely hike. But we're teaching skills along the way. It's an adventure trip, if you will. But it's
very cool.
Yeah, it's a great, it's a beautiful hike. We've done it for the past 2 years, and ever since we started running it, it's been one of the our clients' favorites to come out there and do, because it's an adventure trip. It's over a beautiful terrain. You're gonna see it, but we take our time. We learn some skills. We're doing fire carrying, carrying fire from point A to point B over many miles, doing it safely. We're doing plant identification, you know, foraging, fishing, shelter building, or you sleep in your tent or your tarp, depends, you know. And it's just, it's taking all the skills that we've learned and putting them in a practical application. But we get people out there that have never taken our survival classes before that just want to go for that hike. Mm-hmm. And they're in a family of people that know the skills, so they can just sit back and watch and be like, oh, okay. Or they can join in with us and learn the skills right then and there in the field while, you know, in a practical application.
What are the dates for that?
Oh, I don't know. I'm not sure. I think it's the end of July.
Very cool.
So bad at dates. We do kids classes. So people, we have a TSU 101, I should call them kids classes. I should call them family classes. Mm. You don't just come in and drop off your kid. We 5 years old and up. So we start, and when we're not just doing silly things, that we're not just making paper mache masks or whatever. We're teaching your 5 year old practical survival skills. They're learning knife safety. They're learning how to use, you know, how to use a knife. They're learning, how to start fires. They're learning wayfinding or navigation for kids. They're learning, you know, practical skills. And Hutch is my teacher's phenomenal with kids. It's a 2 day class, but you pay for your kids, and we encourage, well, they have to, the parents come in and they learn alongside with them for free. So the parents are probably, we've run into parents that have never done this stuff before. So the parents are learning alongside their kid, and they're learning how to build fires. They're learning knife safety. They're learning navigation. So we got a TSU, there's a kids and family 101, 201, and then we got a kids and teen class now too.
Sweet.
So, if you have young teens that have never learned these skills, we highly encourage them to take this teen class, because it is geared towards their age group.
Very cool.
The teens can come take the adult classes, but a lot of times the adult classes are geared towards adults, and those teens might get bored, or they're like, man, this is taking me 3 hours to do. I want to go do something else, whereas go play a video game on their phone or whatever, because it's just out of their normal routine. Whereas Hutch is so good with kids and teens that as soon as he doesn't give them a chance to get bored.
Yeah.
They're like, every 15 minutes he's working on a new project. And Hutch has ADHD, so he's like, he has to change, otherwise he gets bored. So he's like, bam, bam, bam. And I've seen him tire kids out. And I'm like, man, I get tired watching him, but the kids love him. So we got a great kids program. We're looking to build that. Hutch actually lives up here in the Golden area. We're trying to start doing day classes up here in the Denver metro area. I say Denver, everybody, that's not, I don't live in Denver, I live in Aurora. Everything north of Castle Rock to me is Denver. So if I say Denver, I mean everything north of Castle Rock. So we're looking at finding a location to run like day classes up here.
Yeah.
3 or 4 hour classes, and whether they're adult classes or kids classes, it might be a 3 or 4 hour navigation, and or maybe we're doing showing people how to make pack baskets or whatever.
Cool.
All sorts of stuff. So we're trying to do that up here. We're looking to expand. We'll probably end up doing that in Colorado Springs too. What else do we got going? And there's, like I said, we have 60 classes. We're working on a hunting program. So Tanner is one of my people that I've trained, but Tanner was a former archery instructor, really great archery guy. But we're actually going to do like a intro to hunting. What it is teaching people how to navigate through the hunting process, how to get your tags, how to navigate through the website, which is very difficult. I don't know if anybody's ever, if you've done it. It can be very confusing. I mean, he's not going to go through. It's not going to be all on the computer. He's just going to help you.
That's a useful skill to learn.
Yeah, though. But then you know we're probably going to skin an animal, squirrel, maybe if we can. But if the idea is we'll have a goat or a sheep, which mm-hmm. the anatomy is the same as a deer or an elk. So we'll teach you how to process it and break it down. We'll do some cooking. He'll talk about you know why you're going out there, but he'll go over bows, rifles, muzzle loaders, because he hunts with all of them. So he'll what is your style of hunting and what do you want to know about it? And so that'll be it's going to be an introductory to hunting class. We're going to do that this year. I think like the last week of June is when that class is slated, and we're going to do another one in August. And then in 2025, we're going to feel that out, see if we get a good turnout on it. We're going to do like a hunting 101 class. Mm. Oh, the introduction to hunting. We'll actually do walks out in the woods and show rubs and droppings and try to track some animals. And the tracking is not going to be a big core part of it, but we'll do probably a hunting 101 and a hunting 201 class. We're still working on that. Another one that I think everybody that goes out into the backcountry should take, and it's a hard sell, but it's a great class. I've taken the class two, maybe three times, and nobody thinks about it, but we have a human tracking class.
Sweet.
We have an introductory to man tracking or human tracking, and then in a tactical tracking class.
I know some women that want to take a man tracking class.
Right. That's why I'm trying to be a little careful how I say that, because I don't mean to do that, but I mean human tracking. We have a introductory to what is it? It's a search and introductory to search and rescue tracking.
Okay.
But there's that one, and then there's the tactical tracking class, which is more geared towards law enforcement and military that we're running. But it is open to everybody, but it's a very serious class. We don't want people coming in and screwing around. But we're teaching people to work in a team. Mm. So if you're in a very serious search and rescue operation where you're working with law enforcement, where you're working with real solid search and rescue teams, you could actually add value. But that's where that one is. But if you think about it, if you know how to track a person, you will never get lost, because you can track yourself back to your original location. So my feeling is if you go hiking, if you go out in the woods and you go alone, or even if you go with people, you should know tracking skills. Mm-hmm. Whenever, a lot of times I'll have my group, I might have to stay back at camp for whatever reason and clean up or shut things down while they're hiking to the other location. And I might leave like 2 hours after them. 2 hours later, I can walk, and I can, because of my tracking skills, I can follow their exact path.
Yeah.
I can figure out exactly where they were, and I catch right up to them. Even if they're in a weird spot, I'm like, oh, why did you guys go this way?
Mm-hmm.
But very, very solid. It's a great skill to learn. And people, so it's funny, all these skills, people are like, why do I need to learn the skills? I only go out for little day hikes. Well, day hikes are one of the things that cause people to get in the most trouble, because they don't go out prepared.
Right.
Some of the most common people to get lost are people that are going out looking for berries or mushrooms.
Get off trail.
They're getting off trail, but they're looking at the ground the whole time. They're not looking up. They're not observing. And they're just going out there with a little foraging pouch, and they're just, you know, I'm going to go get a bunch of raspberries to make a raspberry pie, and they're looking at the ground, and then when they fill their basket, they look up, and they're like, oh, no.
Yep.
Where am I at? I have no idea. I don't have the gear. I don't know where I'm at. I don't know where how to get back. Well, if they took a survival class, now whatever, they're prepared. They can spend the night. If they take a tracking class, they can just turn around and follow their tracks to their their original point. Origin. Yeah.
It's like all the stories about people getting lost while they're peeing.
Right.
You know, it is a day hike. It is on trail the whole time. Mm-hmm. But you don't pee right on the trail.
Right.
You know,
I do, but.
You go 30 yards of the right or left.
Right.
And then suddenly you're like, oh, it's kind of thick in here. Which way was the trail? Mm-hmm. It's got to be over here. So let me walk 30 yards over there. Oh, wait, the trail isn't here. Well, it's got to be like the other way. That, right. And then you get really confused. And then you have those situations.
Yep.
Like the happens Mount a St. lot. Helena.
It happens a lot more than you think. I do a lot of case studies. You know, I'm always paying attention to news articles and searching for this. And it happens a lot more often than people realize, but it's only in the local news of that area. Mm-hmm. Most of the time, it doesn't make international it doesn't make national news unless it's some big epic. This person got saved after being out in the woods for 21 days.
A packet of Taco Bell hot sauce.
Right. You hear about the Taco Bell hot sauce guy, but you don't hear about the 40 other people that actually got lost and never got found.
Yeah. I realize that because I never hear about them, but right.
They're out there.
When I was living up in the Pacific Northwest, I was doing a bunch of backcountry trips, and my aunt would hit me up with a, hey, somebody's missing in those woods, like all the time.
All the time.
Like woods that I was in. So I'd start looking for people, and, you know, she's just like tapped into that and like, you know, listens to all the different hiker reports. But I'm like, dang, they're gone like every week. Somebody's missing up here.
I get a call from, I don't know, usually two or three times a year, I get called by some news station saying, hey, this person, something happened to this person. We want you to. Will you be on the news with us? It's kind of as a subject matter expert and talk about what you think would happen. And it happens a lot, you know. So
you end up doing those?
Yeah. I've done a handful of them.
Yeah.
I've done one for like CNN, an offshoot of CNN, one for like Newsweek, some for like Fox 20. I don't know. Yeah. I've been a lot of smaller local news channels.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I've done probably a half a dozen different stories.
So if you're somebody listening to this and they're kind of considering taking a survival university course, but they're kind of on the fence, what would your advice to be to those folks?
Do it. Come out here for us. I mean, on the fence for coming out with us. It's the biggest thing. Survival seems to be scary for people, the word survival, but it's very real, right? This is what we do, is we teach survival. But the team of people that I brought in are just normal, laid back, chill people. I don't bring anybody in that's super intense. We can be intense if you want us to be, but we're not. It is survival training. It is not survival.
Mm-hmm.
Come out and learn the skills. It's in a laid-back environment with people that care. And we will teach you valuable skills. And it's stuff that you can use in your own home or when you're out in the backcountry.
Mm. That's great.
Yeah.
Well, Jason, I appreciate you coming out.
Yeah, and thanks for having me.
I feel well-versed on everything going on at the TSU. It's awesome because it's a cool time of growth, so I'm like super stoked to be a part of all this and see it happen kind of before my eyes. So I'm really excited for everything that's to come.
I'm glad to have you as part of our team now. It's great. Hopefully we'll continue to grow and we'll have so much more to come.
Yeah, great. Thanks.
Thank you.
See you guys next time. Stay wild.